If you're drinking a cup of coffee or, eating a piece of toast right now, you are actually participating in a centuries-old story.
Yeah, a story full of Arab merchants, Portuguese conquerors, and even severed eyelids.
Wait, severed eyelids. Right. Well, welcome to your custom deep dive into the source material, specifically looking at glimpses of India.
Our mission today is to really uncover how everyday Indian staples are actually these hidden maps of ancient global mingling.
Exactly. And it's such a fascinating lens because we aren't just looking at where food comes from.
Right. No, I mean, we're looking at how it operated. In some cases, it was this deliberate tool for cultural assimilation, and in others, just a lasting byproduct of ancient trade.
Well, let's look at that deliberate assimilation first. Because bread baked in a European-style furnace, it isn't really the first thing you'd associate with historical India.
Right, but in Goa, it's this profound legacy left behind by the Portuguese. They didn't just introduce bread, they literally embedded it into the very fabric of Goan society.
Crew to local bread makers, right? The
Yeah.
paters.
Yes, the paiders. These bakers were a unique single-piece long frock called a kabai, and they became completely indispensable.
Indispensable because, the food became so tied to crucial social rituals. The sources note you literally couldn't have a local marriage without their sweet bread.
Yeah, the bowl. The Portuguese basically anchored their culture by making it a mandatory part of local weddings.
Which is brilliant, really. And the psychological grip of that daily routine, it still lingers. Like the baker making his morning rounds with that specially made bamboo staff.
Oh, right, striking it on the ground to announce his arrival, making that shong zhong sound.
Yes, that zhong zhong sound. It's basically the 16th century equivalent of a modern day ice cream truck chime. A musical cue that makes kids just drop whatever they're doing and run out to the street.
That is such a great analogy. Now, if Portuguese bread was a tool for cultural integration, the coffee culture of Korg represents something entirely different.
Right, the unexpected byproducts of ancient trade and migration. Korg is famous for these massive coffee estates tucked under rainforest canopies in Karnataka.
But the people there, the Kadavas, have a history that's very distinct from the Hindu mainstream. They have incredibly fierce martial traditions.
So fierce that they're the only people in India permitted to carry firearms without a license, which is wild.
It really is. And it brings us to a famous local legend that a faction of Alexander the Great's army moved south, couldn't return home, and simply settled in the hills of Korg.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second. Is there actually any historical fact to that Alexander story, or is that just like an epic local myth?
Well, it is highly likely a myth, but there is a much more strongly supported theory of Arab origin. The Arabian Sea spice trade brought Arab merchants right to that coastal region for centuries.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and the evidence for this assimilation survives in their fashion.
Wait, just because their clothing looks similar to Arab garments doesn't necessarily prove ancestry? Like, couldn't that just be a coincidence of the trade you mentioned?
It's a fair point, but historians look at the specificity of the garment. The Kadavas wear a traditional long black coat with an embroidered waist belt.
Called a kupia, right?
Right, a kubia. And it is virtually identical in design and name to the kufia worn by Arabs and Kurds.
So when you combine the linguistic similarities with the geography of ancient trade routes, you're seeing migratory footprints literally woven into everyday clothing.
Exactly. Moving from ancient trade routes to a truly massive global scale, let's look at Assam and tea. The numbers are just staggering.
Over 80 crore, so that's 800 million cups of tea drunk every single day worldwide.
And for a beverage that ubiquitous, the legends explaining its origin are surprisingly intense.
Oh, you mean the ancient Indian legend about Bodhidharma, the Buddhist ascetic?
Right, the eyelid story.
Yes. So the story goes he was frustrated by falling asleep during his meditation, so he literally cut off his own eyelids.
And where those eyelids hit the ground, 10 tea plants sprouted.
It is the most extreme, literal, I need caffeine to keep my eyes open story in human history. It's crazy.
It's a great story, but pure myth. The actual historical journey of tea, though, is captured in our vocabulary, words you use every day, like chai and chini.
Right, which actually originate from China.
Exactly. Tea was consumed there as far back as 2700 BC, slowly traveling along ancient trade routes long before it became heavily cultivated in Assam.
So that breakfast table is a lot more complex than it looks. The bread in Goa reveals a history of deliberate cultural assimilation.
While the coffee of Coorg and the tea of Assam trace the massive, sprawling paths of ancient global trade.
We spend all this time talking about how humans moved these plants around the globe, pruning tea bushes in Assam into neat rows or harnessing wild coffee in Coorg.
Yeah, we like to think we are in total control.
But the poet Adrienne Rich flips that perspective in her poem, The Trees. She writes about nature actively straining to break free from human confines.
Roots disengaging from the veranda floor, leaves pressing against the glass.
Exactly. The wildness is always just under the surface, waiting to burst out of the house and back into the forest.
It frames domestication not as a final victory, but really just a temporary state.
So tomorrow morning, when you pour that cup of coffee or bite into a piece of toast, ask yourself, are we truly mastering nature?
Or are we just temporarily borrowing its wild energy?